Yes, we were reminiscing. That sounds awfully loud, but we'll go with it. We were reminiscing about back in the day. And that's always kind of fun to do. It's fun to do. But you remember, so people that you got to be really close with, that you traveled with, becoming acquainted with the faith, and then they just disappear. Or they turn on you for something you didn't do. That's kind of hard. And y'all been through it in different situations. But so the last place you would think that would happen would be in the church. And that's exactly where it happens. But we are not new to that. That apparently has plagued the Lord's people all along, all the way back in the Old Testament. I'm going to go to Genesis 37. We're going to talk about Joseph for just a minute. Because like some of the things that have happened in the church, Joseph did nothing wrong. He was given an ability to have dreams, to understand dreams. His father loved him. And the scripture is clear about it. You get a jealousy over it, but it was his young son, born in his old age. And he just identified with this child. So what the brothers ended up doing to him, y'all remember the story, but what they end up doing to him is not because of anything that Joseph actually did, because in the story, they already don't like him. They're already jealous of him. They already hate him. So that when he ends up telling them a dream that, you know, they understand he's going to be the man one day and they're all going to be coming to him for what ends up being the future, a very distant future, but it ends up being the future that actually happens. They get mad at him and decide they want to kill him. And I just want to read this, a little bit of this, starting the second verse. These are the records. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers when he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bila and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. Is this the low thing that you think I talk? I feel myself doing it. So I need to look down a lot. Okay. We had this discussion. He said the microphone is here because of me. I apparently talk low. Now he doesn't want me to talk loud. So TK, you're in trouble. And Joseph brought back a bad report about the brothers to their father. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons because he was from his old age. And he made him this very colored cloth coat, tunic, in the New American Standard. I don't know what year this is. They change it all the time. His brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers. And get this, and they hated him for it. Keep in mind, y'all read this story. It's been studied a lot. But keep in mind, for what I'm bringing to you tonight, these brothers' attitude. They go on to decide they want to kill him. At least some of them do. And then Reuben speaks up. No, let's not shed his blood. They decide to put him in this pit. Then they decide, well, no, let's not hurt him. Let's take him out of the pit and let's sell him into slavery. And we'll be done with him. So this band from Gilead comes by and they sell him. they take him and ends up being sold to one of the officials, Potiphar. And the story goes on from there. Look at who these men are. This is the 12 tribes of Israel. There is zero chance that God can work with these men like this. And yet, the future of everything that God is planning is depending on these 12 tribes, including Judah, that Jesus, our Savior, our King Jesus, is going to come through Judah. He's standing there ready to kill his brother. This story, God has to work a tremendous miracle. Because these guys in this state, they cannot be the foundation of what God is building. Well, y'all know what happens. The famine, the dreams that Joseph gets to interpret. He's put in a powerful position. And sure enough, here comes his brothers. They need food. And there's Joseph. He could have lashed out at his brothers. I mean, they deserved it. You can never forget they wanted to kill him. When you sit around and think that you've messed up in your life, and you've got to maybe do penance, or you've got to clean up, or you've got to do something, you've got to do certain, this is not how the kingdom works. But a lot of people think in the back of their mind, I've got to do a certain amount of good because look at what I did over here. Did you plot to kill your brother? Did you sell your brother into slavery? Yet God turned that around. What they meant for evil, God used in his plan. I think about this sometimes when I meet people. I just saw a guy today. We were coming back from the fishing trip, and as we rode through to try to go into a Walmart, we went to the wrong Walmart. All they sell is food, which clearly we don't need any food. We needed fishing stuff. They didn't have that, so we had to go to another Walmart. This couple came out, and this guy had, I wish I could stand in front of a mirror and reproduce this guy's nasty, I just ate lemon and something face. And right behind him was this little short gal. She is his match. She had the same nasty face. I felt like if you said something, you'd get slapped. I was thinking, you know, and of course, you know, when you're getting ready to speak, you're thinking about what you're doing and going over it in your head. And I was looking at them. I thought, even these people, how many people walk by somebody like that? Or maybe they're their friends. What if they were one of our friends? Would we go, they are too jacked up to hear the gospel? I know none of y'all would do that because we talk about this from time to time. But is that not a thing? We were talking about this a while back. And before I was married, you would not have thought that I would be married. And early in our marriage, you would not have thought that I would become a Christian. You know, that I would put all of that away. So I was kind of like one of those people. I didn't try to kill my brother, though. There are days where he deserved, you know, something. But how God turns things around, we should never prejudge. We won't want to be prejudged. I mean, if God was going to prejudge like sometimes we do, how could he ever have chosen Paul? Paul wasn't just rough around the edges. He was killing people like you and me. He was killing Christians. But God saw something in there that if he could shut his mouth just for a minute and make him stop killing just for a minute. I used to think, man, what if that was us and God had to do something? We were so messed up that God had to beat us down. You know, I'm not immune to those thoughts. When my wife first got sick, I remember thinking, now, God doesn't operate like this. God's not going to hurt my wife to wake me up. But my wife loves me and loves God enough to where she would volunteer to be hurt if I needed that to pay attention to God better. That's a bunch of thoughts that's rolled around in my head. I'm sharing it with you. I don't build my life around confusion like that, but don't we have thoughts roll around in our head sometimes when things happen? We wonder, what is God doing here? Because this looks crazy to me. And I, you know, when they first said what was going on with her, I looked up things and I thought about the worst case scenario. And, you know, there's no making her not suffer. That can't be prevented. But in her mind, she's not. I mentioned this at our event a couple years ago. I don't want to keep going on about it, but she's still that way, so I'm going to tell you. She would not want to worry about her health. She would more be concerned about me. She's more concerned about the kids. Now, you don't pray somebody into Christ, but you do pray about people that you're trying to talk to about Christ. And I've been back and forth about where their line is. What I mean is, we know we can't say Jesus saved that person, and that makes them, you know, become saved. But God hears our prayers and makes things happen that maybe we can't quite explain. So in my family, our children grew up knowing the people that you just heard about back in the day. Mike and his family, Mike's in-laws, they have come to our house as well many times. And our kids love them. But then to have my daughters, one by one, three of them, and I pray every day for my youngest daughter that they don't steal her faith. This is a faith-stealing world. Have y'all heard that before? There are people, this is not new, we've talked about this, but in case you hadn't heard, there are people, it's their full-time job to study things to make you have doubts about what you read in the Bible. They want you to open it up where something that is a joy to you, that gives you encouragement, and they want to go, that doesn't even mean anywhere near what you think it means. That's what they do. Now, I can't imagine giving up everything that I do and I go down a path to where I teach about something I'm not even involved in. You know, I want to teach fishing. That's what I want to do. But what I really want to do is be good enough to where people say he knows what he's talking about. I missed a big one today. Honestly, I'm not lying. I know, so fishermen lie. And they do. I've been there when it's happened. It wasn't me. But I did hook a big fish today. And yes, I missed it. I'd like to teach that. But I can't imagine if I hated fishing. Like I don't care about, I'm not even going to cross the street to talk about fishing. But I'm going to make it my life to criticize fishermen. What kind of energy is behind that? You know what kind of energy is behind that. Satan is roaming around looking for who he can devour. And my wife and I have had a front row seat to watch people get devoured. And then they came after my children. I call it going after. There's this thing that happens with people who believe, and then their faith is in jeopardy. And I'm going to tie this back in to Joseph. But what happens is they see these shiny things out in the world and they want them. So they have their faith. They believe. But boy, it'd be awfully nice if I could go and do this and do that and not have to be around the church family, not pray, not study. These things become more and more important. And over a period of time, the world robs them by waving the shiny things. Now, I watched my oldest daughter go exactly through that. My grandson is here. When I describe what happened to our family with my daughter Jessica, I describe it as our family was all in a horrible accident, and every one of us was injured, and all of us are in some position of recovery. And we're not all in the same place. That's how I view it. I don't know how else to look at it. But I was explaining something to someone about, I don't know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years after they divorced Matthias's parents. And I said, I used the term my son-in-law, Sue. And the person said, he's not your son-in-law anymore. I said, no. I'm making fun of you because I had this on my mind. I said, oh, no. I get to decide that. I stood before God's family, before the church. I stood up at their wedding. And I said, my wife and I agree to this marriage. I have not taken that back. Now, I know they're not married. I'm not deluded. But I agreed to be his father-in-law. And I have not taken that back. Whatever that makes me, he is not estranged and not nothing to me. He is something to me. He's very much something to Matthias and Taylor. Diane loves him dearly. What the world decides to try to make us do, we have no responsibility to follow that. Our responsibility is to follow God. So and of course, my daughter Sarah and Bud, 2 years later, decide, well, they were in a Bible study with this girl, Wendy. Wendy had all these doubts. My daughter Sarah is trying to tell her, all the things that we've studied about, the Bible's wrong. They went on for 3 or 4 months, and I remember there was a discussion, it's probably longer than that. We went down to visit, and Diane said to Sarah, why are you studying with her? She's just trying to undermine your faith. Sarah defended it and said, so no, there's a chance that we can get through to her. I think she's got a lot of these wrong-headed ideas, but I think she's still interested. I'm telling you, I don't believe it. I believe Satan travels around like a roaring lion looking for who he can devour, and I don't know who this Wendy was. But I know she kept on pecking away until my daughter ended up having doubts. But I don't know. That's a different story. He's got other things going on with him. I think he's still injured from losing his dad when he was 10. That has always plagued him, and he's been open about it. And it made him think differently. But somewhere along the line, he decided that going to these photography conventions and all the worldly people that were there And I'm not going to trash my family. I love my family. I love my son-in-laws. But, you know, what they've done, and they're accountable for it. But Sue made a statement. I bring it back to this. He made a statement when Taylor got married, I think. Maybe it was just before that we were talking. And, you know, we would talk about what went on between him and my daughter sometimes. Not all the time. We don't talk about it anymore. But he saw that I was kind of bothered about it. And he said, you know, Jesse's story is not finished being written. That's it. I was like, how can so much be said in such a short sentence? And I have that rings in my head just like when he said it. And that doesn't mean that she's going to come back to Christ. And I'm not hoping against hope when there's nothing there. I don't think we do that anyway. But her story isn't finished being written. And people come back to Christ sometimes. And I'm going to tell you, that's our prayer, that we do what we can do to make the gospel attractive and to make sure we don't make it unattractive as far as it depends on us. So that if she has second thoughts, we're there. Same with Sarah. Of course, our daughter Megan. We have four girls, though y'all don't know. Jesse being the oldest, then Sarah, then Megan, who lives outside of D.C., and then Rachel, who lives 300 feet from my house. It's wonderful. I got three grandchildren that play outside. It's a magical world sometimes. I love it. But when we were young, back in those days that we were talking about, and my kids were little, and the people would come to the house, men in the faith, men have preached all over the world, actually. They've traveled all over the world preaching. They came and sat at our kitchen table, and it was, I ate it up. I ate it up. And so did my kids. And sometimes I wonder, how did we get from there to here? And then I see Joseph's brothers wanted to kill him. God all along had this plan that he had. And I don't quite know how long it took for everything that transpired so that God could have the 12 tribes of Israel. But if all of that could be turned around to something God could use, my hope is that my family can be turned around. Yeah, that's a big ask. I know it is. But I'm asking. That's where I'm at. I'm not giving up on them. I love them more than my own life. I know we say that as men. You know, when you get married, when you're going to get married, you start thinking about what marriage is going to be like. You know, we're men, you know. But then you get married and there's this person in your house. And then you realize you're actually in her house. That's how sometimes it goes. But at some point, you realize if you didn't do it before, it occurred. Maybe it's an event that happens. Maybe there's an accident. Maybe you hear of somebody coming into a house and you realize you would do it. We saw men on television do just the other day. They literally stood up in front of the president. I know people like the president. Some people don't like the president. There was a man that he pushed his wife to the floor. The first shots that rang out. That's the same hotel where Ronald Reagan walked out in 1981 and he was shot. Same building. He stood over her. He's on camera. You know, the news agencies that we hate, Is it okay to hate some things? Okay, sure. You're not just saying that? And, oh, sometimes I'll type, you know how we get on, I'm off the message for just a second. You know, you get on Facebook and you want to do a little battle on a Facebook post. And sometimes I feel like I want to type, you know, you just can't hate Democrats enough because it's so outrageous, some of the things they say. This man stood over his wife, pushed her to the floor, and he's looking around. This guy is former military. He knows what he heard. He knows what's happening. And he's standing up. She's down here below the table. At some point when you become a husband, you realize you will literally take a bullet for her. You will stand in front of a knife. You will push her out of the way and jump in front of a car for her. You will sacrifice yourself for your wife. And then when there's little children, if you're blessed to have children, you know, you might say it. My son-in-law, that's married to Megan, he learned this lesson when our granddaughter was born at 31 weeks, 87 days in the NICU. My granddaughter almost died, and so did my daughter. They flew them separately on helicopters. And nobody knew during the night. Diane was on her way driving up there, and she had no idea if she was going. Sorry. To see our child or not. Or to deal with the aftermath of what would happen. That we would have lost her. And this is the second time her life was at risk having a child. They're not having it anymore. They're stopping it too. But I watched my son-in-law, who doesn't believe, he doesn't have faith. I watched him hold that little baby, that 4 pounds and something. Like, you know, you think how big we are. And this little girl was like this. He's holding her, and I see it in his eyes. He would stand over her while somebody fired bullets out. He would, not even thinking about it. He's not trained in anything like that. Never had a discussion, I don't think. That he loves those little girls. God took that situation and turned it around and used it. He can take any situation and turn around and use it. I don't even know when I'm stopping. In the near future? Oh, it's going to be the greatest 15 minutes ever. So, that takes me. So, you know how you write a message and you build in this nice ease into the next point thing? I don't have that. This is, when he told me what he wanted to cover, David, he gave me a couple of things, you know, like this, like that. I was like, well, the first thing I thought of Samuel. And then I thought of Eli. And they both had two sons. Except Eli, being the priest, his sons were involved in the same way, and they were evil. God ended up killing them. Said, you know, your lifeline is ending right here. You're done. But he didn't do that to Samuel. Although Samuel had corrupt sons, they were judges. And I thought, what is the difference? Why hold Eli accountable? And yet he was a priest. He served God. Because we are required to call evil, evil. And Eli didn't do it. When it was his sons. And I have never taken up and said it's okay. Not because I was planning to do it. It's just, we all talk about it. It's not okay that what my children did. It's not okay that my daughter got divorced. It's not. I love her. I'd do anything for her. But, you know, we are where we are. I can't do anything about it. But I wish it hadn't happened. I really do. But for some reason, the scripture does not record, well, I won't say for some reason, the scripture does not record that Samuel defended his wayward kids. He did not do that. And so in the absence of information that he did that, we cannot assume he probably did. It just didn't get recorded. We can't do that. You can't just say it probably happened, but God didn't write it down. He's a little better about it than that. But his sons didn't follow in the faith. And what did Samuel end up doing? He went out and found David and appointed him king. God appointed him king, but Samuel carried it to the family. And how surprised was he? He's going through all these strapping men and ended up with this kid. But that's who God chose. Samuel could have been thrown away in the history bin, but God still used him for something huge. I bring that out because after everything that our family's been through, I've had self-doubts. Like, what's my place in the kingdom? What do I have to offer? I don't mean I sat around and said, hey, I'm ready to quit. But the little doubts come in. And if I could make a cartoon out of it, it'd be like a doubt coming in and then another part of me going, go away. You know, I don't like you. You're not from God. You're an evil thought. But boy, when your family is under attack, those kind of thoughts come in. And so when I read about Samuel, that his only two sons were corrupt, and God used him, that encourages me that God doesn't mean he's done with me just because this has happened to my children. God's not done with me. God's not done with Diane. What is he doing? You know, sometimes, and I don't mean we're sitting on our laurels. I just had a conversation with a plumber that I've known for several years, and boy, he's not. Remember how I said sometimes we meet people and you think, oh, I might pass on them. They're kind of rough. Well, I didn't pass on him, but every chance to talk to him, he's clearly not interested in having a Bible study. I'll just say it was the last thing on his mind. About a week and a half ago, I see him. Something in his life has changed. He all of a sudden tells me, I believe in God. He's willing to have a Bible study. I've known this guy for 10, 12 years in construction. If you've never been around construction, there's a roughness that runs amongst it that sometimes you would think we would be ill-suited for. But you know what? What if you're exactly suited to be around that? What if there's one guy that needs to be plucked out of that world? And I just, for instance, what if you're the only guy willing to go? What if I'm the only guy willing to go in there and talk to him? I gotta go. Quitting the faith has never crossed my mind. I just told somebody today, I remember being, it was before I was 12 years old. I don't know why. Been to some Sunday school. We didn't grow up in the church, but my parents let me go with somebody to a Sunday school. And I really don't know who it was. And I didn't make any kind of decision. I didn't go forward in anything, well, nothing like that. But I heard about there's a God. There's a Jesus. There's a creation. We come from something. And the point I want to make is that I never remember a time where I objected to the fact that there might be a God. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't go try to figure it out. But there was, I'm not the guy. There are people who rejected God and changed their mind. I'm not that guy. I always thought there's something going on. We're not just here. As I got older, then when we got married, we actually met somebody right after we were married that was religious, let's just say. You know what I'm talking about. They don't want to hear this, but they're very religious. But they were nice. They were great folks. They weren't ugly. It was nothing at the time that made us think alarm bells went off. You know, they weren't crazy Pentecostal. But they may have been close to it. I don't know. But right there started my wife and I going to churches and visiting. We visited several churches. We actually visited a church that you preached at in Mechanicsville. I knew somebody that went there, and we moved on and went somewhere else. We visited at Gethsemane, and the elder at Gethsemane was a pretty angry man. We thought, well, that doesn't fit. Went to another congregation, and the preacher's son got in trouble, and there ended up being an unplanned pregnancy. And we got a dozen more places we visited, all stories like that. And we decided that there was no use to keep looking, that it was a mess out there. Turns out it is. But then one day she decided to go over to this little church down the road, and we met some people that we're still friends with. It's where Brian came about at that place, because the preacher's son went to school with a young man, Justin Spears, who grew up around you, right? Or you?
Like mutual friends.
Mutual friends, yeah. And Brian decided to come around. And here he is. My daughter Jessica went and worked at an ice cream place. It was a Dairy Queen. And she's in there working, and there's this young guy in there who's just getting out of high school. Or maybe he was in his senior year. And he was Presbyterian. But he was interested in what my daughter was saying about the Bible. He came around a couple of times, and he was very interested in some of the other young guys, became friends with Brian and us. And that was Nathan Cox. Nathan Cox developed his faith. It shifted around over the years, but he developed his faith. And a while back, he reached out to TK. We're very close. He's just T to me. He reached out to TK, and when he was at a point where he was ready to start looking again. My daughter is out of the faith, but the work she put in all those years ago is still paying dividends. And she's got nothing to do with it. But it's still there. I don't know if that's because we didn't quit. So what if me and Diane decided to quit too? Clearly God's not on our side because he's not keeping our kids safe. There's people that have done that. They've given up because someone close to them gave up. I'm not sure, because we were a connection for Nathan. What if Nathan didn't stay around? What if he went somewhere else? You don't know who is hanging on through a tough time because they're watching you keep going. I don't know who might be doing that because we went through a tough time. And still, oh, I'm a minute over. I can't tell time. My daughter Sarah, she went to work at a place that lawyers and judges work with, and she met Jeremy, and then she left there, and then Megan went to work there, When she went to work there, she was not part of the church, but she loved Jeremy. Then she left. And then our youngest daughter, Rachel, went to work there. They just can't get their own job. They got to follow along. And, you know, struck up a friendship. And, you know, he said, "Oh, you're Sarah's youngest sister." She said, "Yeah, I don't even remember what we were having going on." But Jeremy took that opportunity to say, "Yeah, I like Bud and Sarah. I'd like to see them." And they put something together, and Jeremy started coming around. He had rejected the gospel before. But when my daughter Rachel went there, he was changing his mind. Now Sarah's gone. Sarah and Bud baptized him in the James River. We went down there in the middle of the day and baptized him right there. The water was pretty clean at the time, so I think it was a legit baptism. But it was, I'm clearly joking. Bud's gone. Sarah's gone. Jeremy's not about to quit. Jeremy's faith doesn't depend on them. It hurt him to the core. In fact, you know, he preached he did Megan's wedding and preached there as well. He slides it in with every service he does. So my daughter cares about him, but it's a weird situation. I'm not one of these people that cuts people off when they reject the faith. I get very frustrated. There's people I've vented. Brian and I've vented stuff back and forth about it, and I appreciate it. But I would still do anything for them. There's no benefit to cutting somebody off. We recently watched a man that I went to school with. He was at Pole Green when I went there. He left his family and decided to leave the faith and just led a completely worldly life. And last year, starting probably a couple years ago, it wasn't so great being out in the world, not being in the church. Ricky Novak. And he started coming back around. He now preaches at a church down below Richmond. And through his kids, that's where Phil came from. I guess the picture I'm trying to paint to you is a lot of stuff happens in the church. We got to stay faithful. When other people are falling apart, we've got to stay strong. The topic was filling in voids. God had to create the void for Joseph. And then fill it. Have it in your mind to never stop believing. There's three things. Everybody likes to give three things. I'm going to give three things. Have it set in your mind to never stop believing. Don't let anybody take what you have. Number two, always be aware that there's things out there and people out there that want to take your faith. Don't be fooled. You don't go around like there's not a danger out there. Be prepared. And number three, and I'm going to tell you, this isn't one a lot of people miss. Don't delude yourself that you can just do it on your own. Oh my goodness. You cannot do it on your own. You find me one guy that did it on your own, and we'll find 1,000 that lost everything trying to do it on their own. I was going to sing that song, "Don't Stop Believe," but I'm not going to do it. I appreciate being able to come and bring you all this message. I hope it's helpful. y'all's messages of the other guys has been great. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot. I just didn't pay that close attention with the difference of Eli and Samuel with their kids. I kind of glossed over it, so I found something when I was reading it. I appreciate that.